WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. I'll be at Coco's on Wednesday with our mayor, Brandon Scott. Apparently, we're going to have some visitors from Coppin State. Our Senator Corey McCray is going to be with us, as well as sports cartoonist Mike Resigliano, the pride of Buffalo. Head to Chicago this week. I got a flight. I got a pizza joint. Got a lot of friends in the Illinois area, in the Chicagoland area. This guy and I go back a long time, the turn of the century. I was nationally syndicated at 101 Sports and then at Sporting News Radio. And every once in a while, they would put a stranger on my couch out in White Marsh. And this guy, I think, did that on more than one occasion, having breakfast out on my balcony. Jim Lickey, longtime AP writer, has been all over the world covering all sorts of big league sports things and Olympics and things like that, joins us now from the Windy City as I make another approach. Jimmy, how you been? How's life out in Chicago, man?
Like I said, no complaints. It got cold pretty much the end of last week. We got a little rainstorm, and once the rain turned cold here, you know winter is on its way, and it's arrived this week. Not serious winter yet. It's still 40s and stuff, but it's getting windy, a little bit of snow, and time to get the parkas out.
Yeah, I remember when Mark Jenskow wanted me to live in Northbrook, Illinois, and I'm like, yeah, I'll be there for the 2 weeks of summer. The rest of the year, I don't know so much about that. We played three games in Chicago. I've attended all of them. The 98 game was at the old Soldier Field toward the end. We stunk. They stunk. No good. Cold. It was Christmas week. It was 10 degrees. Next time we came in, it rained sideways. It was 42 degrees and raining. It was lovely. It was like a late game, like a 4 o'clock game that ended in darkness, in mud and soaking wet. And then last time they blew a tornado through. So, I don't know what beholds the Ravens fans this week, but certainly the Ravens stunk on Thursday night against the Dolphins. The Bears trying to find their way, and the Bears are always trying to find their way. I mean, you've done radio forever. You go back to McMahon and through this Jay Cutler period and whatever, but the Bears are, and the fan base is always on to the next guy. Right now, this guy's the next guy, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the problems run so much deeper than that. The thing you just referred to, 20-plus years really of just miserable football teams, not much offense. I mean, we had that brief 2007 run that led to the Super Bowl, but this has not been a good team. Boy, you can go back to McMahon, and that's basically the last time we're talking about a team that was built to last more than a season. They've tried a couple of times retooling. The Cutler thing you just mentioned, They lost their identity as a defensive team. They haven't had a decent running game in a while. It's a mess here. And frankly, you just go back. The easiest way to just go up top, look at the way management has handled everything. And we haven't had a good general manager in almost two decades. So I don't know what people expect to change around here. Fields is a breath of fresh air, but they may ruin him before he gets to anywhere near his real potential.
For any of our listeners this week and don't know my history or see these old pictures of me in Chicago at the turn of the century and the Michael Jordan era and all that, going to Cubs games and Harry Carey and all of that, you've been at this a long time, man, and you came in sort of that. I met so many of you, so many really competent, good sports people in Chicago in my 3.5 years of being in and out of there, and relationships I kept to the grave with Chet Kopic, losing him, and Papa Joe was part of what we did at Sporting News Radio. But what a great sports town! And I laid over in Midway about a month ago when I blew my back out leaving Omaha. I had the power cramp in the Midway B9, no food to eat in the Midway airport. It's always been awful for that. But every time I'm there, I sense the energy of sports, whether it's college sports in Big Ten or just the fact that the Bulls were really something and the Cubs have always been something. And the White Sox, and my last name on the South Side, they've won a World Series. The Blackhawks, despite this horrific scandal that's come out almost a decade later, very, very relevant, hockey and in Chelios before that. Just in all the time there, and I went to the old stadium and saw Jordan play. I went to the old Comiskey Park back in the late 80s on like a weird trip because I had to experience it. Chicago's such a great sports town, but the Bears sort of run it, but the Bears never have any traction to run it.
So I think the Bears are kind of the team that we most identify with. You know, it's winter. You just talked at the start of the game. Last time you were here, it was raining sideways. The mud is dripping all, you know, is kicking up all over the field. So people like that toughness. You know, Jordan was the best thing that's happened to sports in probably, I'm going to say since Muhammad Ali, and Ali didn't belong to any one place. And I think people didn't get, I don't know the exact way to put it. People weren't satisfied with the Jordan thing, even though, again, it's one of those things you see once, maybe every half century. And there's always this idea that the Bears are going to rise again. And so that sustains people through the Cubs, even the Blackhawks' success. I mean, 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years. People take a lot of that stuff for granted. They're always focused on the Bears, even with the Cubs, which was a great story. It lasted a year with, unfortunately, and that team is already broken apart. But the Bears have been sort of that one anchor that everybody in town clings to. And yet they've probably been the worst franchise. I suppose if you look at it, you know, statistically, they've probably been the worst franchise in terms of performance over that entire time period. People will never give up on that team. And I got to tell you, you're long suffering. If the Bears are going to be your marker, you're going to be disappointed a lot.
Jim Lickey's covered sports longer than I can remember. I've known him a good half of my life now, going back to the turn of the century in our time at Sporting. Give everybody a little primer on you. If I meet you, sit next to your plane and say, oh, Jim Lickey, I've seen your byline at the Associated Press. What are you doing these days? And I mean, your background, you could talk about all sorts of things. And, you know, I've had you on the show talking about esoteric things and things that you've covered. But in your lifetime, what were the stories? You mentioned Jordan. I mean, just being around for all of those years, you were courtside for almost all of that, weren't you?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I don't think there was better entertainment in almost any field. No one was ever as good at their job as Michael Jordan was as his. And so, you know, when I started this job, we were still going into offices, and not even, you know, part-time offices I'm talking about. The editors wanted to see you every day to make sure you weren't, running around doing nothing. And so
when you're going to do nothing, you're going to do nothing in front of me, not behind my back.
That's exactly right. I mean, that was the logic behind that entire thing.
Oh, dude, my days in the newspaper in the 80s, you know, just being there, being a part of it and seeing people come together, creative people, boy, that really would be missing. If newspapers existed in that environment and nobody could be in the room together, it kind of sucks, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the synergy is what makes great stories. You know, you've got an editor or a fellow reporter with a good idea or something that can tell you that something that's missing from a story. The thing about Jordan that was great is that within maybe, 15 games into his rookie season, you knew this guy was something special. Well, I don't think anyone knew, including Jordan, how special he was going to be. But the reason I raise that is because I still am a national sports columnist. So the theory was everything you write about has to have implications everywhere. And so I started trying to sell my editors that this Jordan thing is just going to blow up and blow up and blow up. And they're like, yeah, you're just looking for another reason to stay in Chicago, not jump on a plane somewhere. And the great thing was, you know, if you think back to that time when Jordan showed up here in 84, ESPN and all the other cable networks were just beginning. And basically what they were looking for were highlight stuff to put on a highlight reel. And this guy produced a reel every single night. And so gradually I got my editors more and more invested in the idea that this was the story to be following. And he didn't disappoint for a moment after that. I mean, if I've got to pick one thing, being here day after day after day, for that entire run, you know, everything from the retirement, from his dad being murdered, from his comeback, from, the flu game. You could just go up and down the line. And this guy was something worth writing about every night. And as soon as you put the two words Michael Jordan in the story, you knew you had a lot of readers. So that's the one thing I got. I remember a boxing writer, a guy named Ed Schuyler, who's since retired and is now well into his 80s. And not a lot of guys would have bet Eddie would have made it that late. But he got the last question at the last press conference because the AP tends to get the openers and sometimes the closers and a lot. And he covered Ali from start to finish. And he got up at the last press conference. He said, thanks for the great run, champ. And I got to tell you, I feel that way about the Jordan era.
Jim Lickey's here, Chicago historian and the Associated Press, a longtime columnist and my one-time colleague at the Sporting News Radio 20-some-odd years ago now, and catching up with old Chicago friends, coming back into Chicago. What makes it tick at this point? I mean, part of it, and this goes back to, you know, my wife's from New Hampshire, and I was going to Boston for 20 years before they ever won anything, right? I mean, literally, it was Celtic afterglow, and they were still talking about Bobby Orr and Canigliaro, and the Patriots were never anything, right? And Boston, so different 20 years later. Chicago, to me, too. The fact that the White Sox had a parade. The fact that the Cubs finally got it done. The fact that they built a whole new neighborhood around Wrigley Field up on the north side. The fact that the Blackhawks won a couple of Cups when that was always sort of this longing thing about them and, you know, Original Six and all of that kind of stuff. And a hockey town where people played hockey. My buddy Gene Ubriaco ran the Wolves for 30 years, you know, up on the north side, and they always drew fans and kids with blades and kids playing hockey. It's just such a varied place in that way. And I, from a sports perspective, it felt like people came together through all of this. The Cubs run was a hell of a run and something that I don't even think Cubs fans really envisioned the day where they would really win the World Series, right?
You know, it's funny. I got my older son is 40 now. That's how old I am, but he grew up seeing the team go to a couple of playoff games. Whereas I grew up, they never sniffed anything. I mean, you know, after Gabby Hartnett in the 1945 World Series, you didn't see anything in this town baseball-wise for a long time. The White Sox did end up winning in 2006. You know, what's interesting about this is, as you pointed out, we get a fairly short spring. We might have a fairly short fall. Summer is generally, you know, 2.5 months. And it could basically get socked in from November until March. And so people look for any excuse to gather. They look for any excuse to sort of not just gather, but gather in a community. And sports has been it throughout the entire time. The problem here is that we've had pretty lousy management in a lot of places, in almost every team, in almost every era. And so the teams you mentioned are special in particular because, for instance, Bill Wirtz ran the Blackhawks forever and ran them into the ground, chased away Bobby Hull even after a wonderful career. And then his son
didn't put the games on TV, famously. Like, you couldn't watch the
team. He was going to save a lot. He thought he was going to make a couple more dimes by keeping him off TV and putting fannies in the seats. And instead, he alienated the whole fan base. His kid came in, made a very clear ceremony and a gesture of bringing everybody back in. And then they made a couple of really smart draft choices, Taves and Kane and Duncan Keith. And then they suddenly took off. They won 3 in 6 years, and now it's a mess again. White Sox have had the same owner for a long time, Jerry Reinsdorf, who genuinely loves baseball, also owns the Bulls, by the way. And so he's had pretty good mini runs. A Jordan run wasn't a mini run. It was basically 6 in 8 years, and it could have been 8 in 10 years had Jordan not gone away. But the Bears have been the subject of mismanagement by the McCaskey family. And they go back to George Halas. Virginia McCaskey, the matriarch of the family, still basically runs the teams. And she hires more based on loyalty and cost than she does on competence. And so the Bears have just been muddling along this entire time. The boldest move they made, you referred to earlier, was picking up Jay Cutler and flipping from a defensive-oriented franchise to an offensive one. That didn't work, and they're still rumbling around. So people here, you know, you watch the games at Wrigley in April when you see people in shirt sleeves all the time, because any reason to get out is a good enough reason for people to suddenly go pack a place. And that's what we get in sports. We just don't get rewarded as often as we should be.
When I think of my days in Chicago, I think of one thing, Jim, traffic. And sitting in it, trying to get to Wrigley and trying to get to Comiskey and trying to get to concerts and places and all of that, United Center. Jim Lickey is our guest. He's at the Associated Press. He's in Chicago. He's a longtime colleague of mine there and talking about Chicago sports. We talk about bad ownership, man. And like from a columnist standpoint, and I've essentially been a 30-year columnist here on the radio every day and writing. I've written 2 books on the Ravens championships, you know, with Purple Rain 1 and 2 and Billick era and Harbaugh era and Ozzie Newsome. But ownership that now we're 25, 26 years into this and Eric DaCosta's running the place now and John Harbaugh's still here and they've got Lamar Jackson. They've gone about this creating an offense and a revolution and a different kind of way to go at it, thoughtful, analytic minded. And then, Jim, we go across the parking lot to what used to be the Baltimore Orioles, right? And you've sat 800 miles in a time zone away covering sports, watching the White Sox be mostly bad, the Cubs being whatever they are, but the relevance of baseball in your community, finding that in a lacrosse community, a true lacrosse community, the hub of lacrosse really in America, Hall of Fame's here, that it has been a very easy transition for white suburban kids to put a lacrosse stick in their kids' hands. And what's that? What that's done to downtown, to baseball, and then you pile on for old people like us, analytics, shifts, absolute outcomes, no hit and run, no stolen bases, everybody's playing, pull hitters can't exist anymore, everything's a strikeout, everything's a home run. Baseball sucks. I mean, my back was screwed up in October, and I laid in bed for weeks where I couldn't move so much, and the television was on, and I thought, well, maybe this will be me coming back to baseball, and every time I put it on, I couldn't recognize it. And part of that is, dude, my name's Aparicio. You know, I got a name on the wall on the South Side out there. Baseball is everything I ever did here. When you knew me 20 years ago, you know, the Orioles were still hanging on. Dude, we're 20 more years into this. You mentioned McCaskey and everything that happened after Halas, everything that happened after Hofberger here and the bricks getting built down here. It's been, you can't overcome poor ownership, man.
No, and baseball lost an entire generation. If you remember, we used to, I mean, I can personally think back to at least three or four columns that I wrote about, why don't we play a couple of day games? Why don't we squeeze a couple back in the middle of this, play the game when kids can watch it? I don't think it was just obviously the lack of day games. It had a lot to do with how late the season ran, with how much better football was televised. Baseball is a hard game to televise. It's in this sort of instant gratification era, it's pretty hard to ask a guy to watch a batter take pitch after pitch after pitch. Pitchers on the mound, you know, to doing everything from smacking the rosin bag to running around to wave, shaking off, you know, pitches from the catcher. It's become too slow of a game for the time. I don't know that they're going to be able to update it to the point where people are, where kids in particular are going to start watching again. The thing that's made the game unwatchable to me is you hit on it exactly. The metrics are such that, you know, we talk about how this happens in lots of other businesses, but you find a bunch of guys who are smart enough to realize where the weaknesses are in a market, and then they go and exploit it. So these guys who figured out that a strikeout is just an out, and we all knew that, but it used to be a kind of a shame attached to it. You didn't want to strike out. You felt like you failed somehow. But the point is, you know, on a piece of paper, it's no different from a ground out. So they started looking at ways to maximize run, and the skills that we used to prize about baseball, hit and run, knowing when to take a pitch in a crucial situation, knowing when to go for the extra base. Now it's basically just try to get one or two guys on, hit a home run, and everybody's going to go home. Pitchers throw 100 miles an hour with no regard for how long they're going to last. It's all become situational play. The shifts are a perfect example of that.
They don't have starting pitching anymore. Oh, and every time I put it on, they want me to gamble on it. I've been watching it my whole life. I've never known anyone that's gambled on baseball. Like, you're a real degenerate if you're, like, to me. Like, I've known a lot of degenerate gamblers, bro. I grew up in Dundalk. I'm from Baltimore, East Side. Tons of people that have screwed their lives up. And I do commercials about playing responsibly when you're playing the lottery and our other. But baseball gambling, that's the new thing they think's going to. You and I are going to get action on whether the next pitch is going to be a strike or a ball. We're going to do what we used to do out in the outfield, put a dollar in the hat, and, you know, you get the number 8 hitter to hit a home run. If he hits the home run, you get the $18 or whatever. Like, goofy side bets. But the worst thing is, all of it was based on starting pitching that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, and unlike the other games which already had the viewership, I don't think that's going to bring people to put eyeballs back on baseball. I mean, people may still be betting. Look, if you remember during the pandemic, Russian ping pong took off. I mean, there was like a serious handle going on a match that looked like it was being played in somebody's basement. Guys showed up in T-shirts and, you know, and pajamas. And so people are always going to bet. The question is that going to be a plus or minus for your game? I think in some ways you could argue it's helped a lot of sports. It was the reason college football, you know, survived, it was the, or pro football survived, because college football used to be the bettors, you know, paradise, and then you used to buy a parlay card so you'd take five or six more games on Sunday when the NFL was playing.
I have no idea what you're talking about. My dad worked at the point, right? You know, not as an inducement to wager, and you know, one would get you five, two would get you three. You know, like I remember it was points. It was a point system, as I remember.
Yeah, and that was the reason the NFL, as I said, survived for a long time. They were literally riding on the back of the popularity of college football, because everybody, you know, had a loyalty somewhere in college football, and the loyalties to the NFL teams at the beginning, well into the 40s, was still pretty small, to be honest with you. The thing that's gonna, it won't change sports in a meaningful way unless, you know, the one thing everybody raised at the time betting began is this is going to affect fan loyalties. It's going to take fans away from teams because they're going to basically be interested only in the guys that they've got in their fantasy team that given weekend. We haven't seen that yet. You know, betting basically can enhance the experience, I guess, if you want to put it that way, if that's how strongly you feel about a team or about a player. The problem with baseball is the original attachment isn't there yet. People will watch football, I think, whether or not they've got a wager on it. They, you know, the NFL is a master at crafting drama. You look how many games wind up being decided. I won't say it's as much as in the NBA, where, you know, the last 2 minutes are everything. But yet you've got still got people watching football, even with their loyalties spread all across the league. Baseball hasn't found a way to get that anchor in yet. And I don't think gambling is a way that's going to do it.
What have you been doing lately? What have you been writing about? I've been doing a lot with the NFL. I was in St. Louis seeing the Rolling Stones when I blew my back out. And, you know, I'm in their football stadium watching the Rolling Stones because they don't have a football team anymore. They're about to bend the L.A. Contingent over and Kroenke. The Dan Snyder emails, the John Gruden suing the league. I mean, the NFL, it's a viper's pit. It really, really is. And they're rolling over on each other now in regard to who was indemnified in the St. Louis situation when they all voted to put the thing in Carson to begin with. And then Jerry Jones comes in. Your guy Reinsdorf would always say the owners' fights were about owners and owners not getting together with baseball. In football, they've all managed to get along and keep the peace. Baseball's about to go through labor unrest again. But football, you know, usually the owners all get together and a bunch of Republicans and vote socialist and get together and take all of their money and their TV money and pool it all together and do this strength of league thing. Seeing them fight with each other and seeing them outing emails and protecting Dan Snyder from whatever he's done and Congress getting involved, you know, antitrust, there's all of these things involved, right?
Yeah, so the NFL is a perfect illustration of that saying that the problem with building an empire is sooner or later you run into somebody else's empire. So you've got 32 owners, all of whom have these little duchies and basically want to run things their way. And then a couple of times a year, they get together and they decide on a couple of rules just to kind of limit everybody's fighting. It never works. I mean, if you could find a TV show that throws off as many great storylines as the NFL, you know, I don't think anything exists. It'd definitely be a hit show because, as you pointed out, there's almost always infighting. The product on the field is spectacular and it's televised in a way, you know, slow-mo replay. If you think of all the things that basically have almost been pioneered they've been pioneered in sports because of football. It's a game that was literally made. All sports are entertaining. This game looks like every time there's a way to improve it, they never miss it. They just never miss it. I mean, look at the field now. You know, when you and I were kids, and especially when I was a kid, the field was dirty. You could barely make out the markings on the field. You know, the stands were like half full. You look at it now, and there's so many things going on that screen that I almost wish they'd go back to more of a soccer picture where there's a clock, there's a score, and you can kind of, you know, figure out how you want to follow the action. When you watch an NFL telecast, there's the first down line. When they get across the 50, there's the field goal line. You know, there's every possible demarcation you could get.
But, you know, the blue puck didn't work in hockey, right? I mean, we've seen the guy on second base in the 10th inning is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yeah, you know, these seven-inning games. So we're all trying to tweak things. And the NFL, to your point, it's almost like, dude, they got guys with brain damage. I mean, they have the absolute original sin, right? They have taken advantage of this tribal thing where they've screwed my city over back in 84. We begged to get it back. I paid them for 25 years for my tickets. And, you know, I haven't talked to a football player in 2 years as a media member here in 30 years because we're never going back in again. They're going to lock us out. They're absolutely going to lock out media members. There will be no more sports journalists. So I've gone through this whole metamorphosis, but to your point, I was up late Monday night, Vegas, watching, waiting for the Raiders to maybe come back and watching DeSean Jackson kick the ball around, and I'm getting on a plane to come to Chicago this weekend. It really has captured the imagination in a way that our parents would come back and say, what happened to boxing? What happened to horse racing? What happened to, you know, all of these things that we recognize where football is so outpaced it all because every week it's good.
It absolutely is. But part of it is luck, too. You know, it's a game that's so, what did George Will call it? It's random violence interrupted by a series of meetings. And so football is a perfect game for our time. You've got, you know, the huddle to basically collect your wits, and then stuff goes crazy the minute the ball snapped. You know, you've got 11 different one-on-one battles going on. They're all captured on a single screen. It's gotten so good at, again, providing this product that has, unfortunately, the violence, you know, it looks like TV violence. And yet, as we now know, a lot of guys are going to suffer at the end of their career. But in that moment of the game, there's so much going on that your dopamine is just getting fed and fed and fed. And the storylines afterwards, the stuff you point out, the infighting. You know, I wrote a column about when Aaron Rodgers first came out the night that he was tested positive for COVID. And it dawned on me. 3 weeks ago, we'd been screaming about Urban Meyer getting a lap dance or getting rubbed up in a bar by a girl. The next week after that was Gruden's emails. The couple of days after that was the Washington State coach, Nick Rolovich, refusing to get vaccinated, getting bounced out of his job. So football counts on this kind of churn, churn, churn. And again, they almost never fail to produce something that takes your mind off whatever happened the week before and sets the table for the week that's coming ahead. And so I think, you know, the reason Bears fans are so long suffering here is they keep thinking at some point that 85 team or something very much like it is going to materialize like out of Brigadoon or something. And the Bears are going to win another Super Bowl.
Well, Jim Lickey is here, the Associated Press. I go all day with you, but like, I hadn't even thought about this. Like, you brought up Aaron Rodgers, and I'm thinking, kid killed, you know, a woman and her dog last week in Las Vegas. You know, just crazy off the field stuff happening. In Chicago, they drop a bomb like 2 weeks ago. We might be moving the Bears out of the city. How about that? You know, and in the middle of Atlanta, moving their baseball team out to the suburbs. I've got an empty Camden Yards. By the way, Jimmy, you want to feel good about the Orioles' future? They're on a limited 2-year lease right now. They're this year and then one more year, and then we'll see how things go as the owner's kid lives in Nashville wearing cowboy boots, running around with Tim McGraw and, you know, running around, right? I mean, so all of this is going on when Kroenke steals his team and moves it out. Meanwhile, you got the Bears, and I've always been blown away that they took this stately old war memorial, Soldiers Field on the tundra of Lake Michigan, and they dropped this spaceship on the top of it 20 years ago that looks like a clamshell. It is so bizarre, you know, like that it ever got designed the way it got designed. And I thought from the minute it's there, I'm like, this place has all the suckiness of the old and all the suckiness of the new all plopped down into really awful weather in a place nobody can get to, in the middle of a park at the end of a lake where it rains and it's awful and it's just awful. And someday they'll move the Bears. Well, where are they going to move them? And I'll let you pick it up from here because it's created quite a stir out there, right? I mean, I have a feeling 8 years from now, 16 years from now, when the Ravens play the Bears out there, the week after they play the Frankfurt Chargers and the London Jaguars, that the Bears will have something that's not whatever that thing is they built down there 20 years ago that always felt like a bad idea.
Well, the thing to remember is that the still the number one sport in Chicago is politics. And so when they built that, whatever that thing is inside Soldier Field, it was a compromise in a lot of ways because it was going to be mostly publicly funded. By the way, it hasn't still been paid off and won't be paid off for another 30 years. The Bears have a lease that runs at least through, I think, 2032, if I'm not mistaken. It would cost them not a huge amount of money to get out of there. You know, if had they put a roof on that, again, I'll call it whatever you want to call it, but had they put a roof on that thing, they would be there probably in perpetuity because people, you know, for all of the, you get them one of the best views of any NFL game ever when they put the camera looking out towards the lake and you look over the rim of Soldier Field back there, it looks like they're playing in the wilderness. It's really right in the middle of the city. The thing that, you know, and the Bears have been threatening to leave forever. I mean, Soldier Field started as this, it was a war memorial in some way, but it used to see 150,000 people. It was like the Maracanã in Brazil. And then they closed off one entire section to make it look a little bit more like an NFL field. And then when it was time for the Bears to start bellyaching in the early 2000s, the city came up with a couple of different options, but they were always going to involve Soldier Field. The Bears went ahead and agreed to those changes. The roof got lost in what would have been a really, really smart move. And so they renewed.
Well, you would have had two Super Bowls by now, right?
Oh, well, for sure you would have won because we know the NFL loves rewarding people who spend the public's money on their stadiums. People have gotten smart to that. I mean, look at what happened in San Francisco. That, you know, you're not going to get much public funding. At least you won't get the kind of public funding you did back in the day.
Well, the price of being a bad actor, I mean, Kroenke's already offered $100 million to St. Louis. It's going to wind up costing at least $1 billion or $2 billion. And if not, they might get a franchise that, quite frankly, they might not even want this time around. I don't even know if they want to be in the NFL in St. Louis anymore. They might just want to take $1.4 billion and put it towards schools or so. I don't know. But what's going on with these franchises is at a different level, like at, you know, than where we were 30 years ago as far as Europe's availability in this, playing games over there and really making the NFL a global sport because that's where the money is. You know, the kid that saved my wife's life twice is from Essen, Germany. He watches the NFL every week. You know, he's 28 years old. He's hooked for life. You know, when games are in London, his friends want to all go. You know, like the NFL's real in Europe. And I wouldn't have believed it had I not seen it myself.
Yeah, but you got to remember that that's a really hard game to stock. You can find a soccer player in 15 minutes anywhere in the world. You can't find them in America, apparently, because we still stink, even though we are finally getting a little better.
But they beat Mexico and Pulisic rubbed it in. Come on, you saw it.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hey, look, let's be honest. Weston McKennie, I mean, we finally got guys that could play for other teams. I raised both of my boys with hopes that one of them would finally make it to the national team. You know, used to tie his left foot behind him, make sure that he knew how to get by on one.
It's because you traveled to places like Maracanã. You've already dropped in here.
Yeah. And as the son of immigrants, I grew up playing soccer. So it was not a foreign game to me. But my point is, you're going to have a hard time coming up with enough talent to stock a league worldwide in football because you've got size limitations, obviously. Kids that don't grow up with the game are going to find it hard to do. And you take a game like soccer. Well, you know, why aren't Americans good? And this is a quick tangent, but so I always used to argue, you know, if you put four kids, you grab four kids from any corner, different corners of the world, put them in a room and said, I want three passes and then I want you to maneuver the ball out the door. They wouldn't even have to talk to each other. They wouldn't have to do anything. They'd know instinctively what to do. If you gave four U.S. kids a basketball and said two passes and out the door, same thing. They wouldn't have to do much beyond look at each other, see who's getting the ball. And yet you put the ball down at their feet and all of a sudden you might as well be on the surface of the moon. These kids, you know, they're not thinking that way. The NFL is going to have to seriously ramp up the number of people that play this game. And I just don't see how that's going to happen because we know what the safety You know, I went to a Bears clinic about 4 or 5 years ago. Roger Goodell showed up. Safe tackling safety for kids. Somebody said, my kid's 5 or 6. Is this too early to start playing football? And the audience started screaming, no, no, no. I think it's going to be, you know, football's reckoning may yet come. And we were talking about how big it is, how easily they crank out storylines, how devoted the fans are. I wonder how long they're going to be able to stock the pond, to be honest with you. Look at what's happening with insurance costs. I mean, I spent about 2-3 years around the time of the concussion settlement trying to look into a lot of the side issues on this one. Football's got some headaches coming down, and no pun intended. They've got some heartache coming down the road. But you're right. Right now, that game is pretty much on top of the world.
All right, I come to Chicago one night, and Licky's going to take me on the old Czech Kopic, Harry Carey, Rush Street tour. You're going to take me out. No budget, you know. We're on the McCaskey's dime. Where are you taking me in Chicago? What's the Licky experience in Chicago in 2021?
Well, you know, if it's hard to kind of capture a whole town in one evening. I mean, the obvious thing is, you know, Gene and Giorgetti's for steaks. That place is just an institution. Meat used to be, you know, we were the meatpacking center of the world. Hog butcher of the world is the way Carl Sandburg put it in his poem. So obviously we'd have to start with a good steak. I was at Buddy Guy's Blues Club. Buddy Guy is now 80 something years old. Saw Little Ed and the Blues Imperials with Wright Thompson, the ESPN writer, Rick Tellender from the Sun-Times. We're all old blues addicts, so we wound up there one evening. You know, here's why this is a great town. I went to the opera last Sunday with a friend and her mom to see The Magic Flute, and it was more like a Wes Anderson movie than it was an opera. So I got to tell you, we could do almost anything in a night here, especially if you take the cap off the expense account. And that's why I love living in the city. You know, a lot of people, I got a lot of buddies that either live in Las Vegas or in Arizona or Southern California. And all they do is go on and on about the weather. I'm as much a fan of the sun and warm as the next guy. But I got to tell you, to me, I want something to look forward to. And the great thing about living in the city like this is whether it's sports or culture or art or deep dish pizza or a grilled hot dog, whatever it is you want, you're never more than about 25-30 minutes away from satisfying that craving. And it's pretty hard to find a lot of towns where you can do that and then go to work the next day.
The Wrigley Building, Chicago is. There you go. My kind of town. Jim Licky's always been my kind of guy. I'm sorry you're not on my couch anymore and passing through. And, you know, Matt Nahagian's out in the West Coast and we're doing all this stuff.
Was that place fun or what?
You know, we had a good time at the turn of the century at Sporting News Radio 101 Sports. We really did. I have such fond memories. I had Randy Merkin on this week talking about his book and booking a guest. Your dear friend Rick Tellender, who I've become friends with over years, is going to be joining me before the week, sir. So it gives me a chance to go to Chicago. I will say this. The last time I came in, my dear friend Lonnie Willems, who became a police officer, is an officer in Chicago, sent me to Pequod's Pizza up north now. Now, not by Wrigley, the original one in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And Czech Kopic was supposed to be with me that day. We had it all organized. And there was just a lot of ice on the ground that day. It was in January, and he didn't make it. And I never got to spend time with Chet again. I just love Chet so much, and I'll miss him this weekend. But if I get there and my back allows me, I'm going to rip it up for Chet, old school. I mean, you know, Chet was a legend.
Attaboy. I mean, you know, we were just talking about somebody ran a video of Michael Jordan's brief baseball career where he doubles to driving a run in the Sox-Cub game at Wrigley, and Harry Carey is on doing the announcing on the video. And that made me remember the days when I started in sports. We had a guy named Joe Mushel, who was the sports editor, local legend. Him and Harry used to be the marshals of almost every parade, almost every night, going down Rush Street, you know, either heading east towards I can't remember the name of the club now, but that was almost like clockwork. If you had nothing else to do and you suddenly decide you want to go out for a late pop and see a lot of people behave badly, you just showed up on Rush Street and waited for the parade to start. We've got smaller versions of that going on now. Like I said, there is never a lack of things to do.
Guilty as charged, Chicago, Illinois. They tried to make me live there, but I knew, you know, wouldn't have been good for me. So I stayed here in Baltimore. Jimmy, take care of yourself. I'll send everybody out to follow you. Jim Litke, L-I-T-K-E. You can find him, Associated Press, anywhere, Chicago sports and deep thoughts. Next time I bring you on, we're going to go Olympics. We'll go World Cup. We'll talk Qatar. We'll do all that. I'll let you bitch about the NFL this time, though, Jimmy.
I appreciate that because I got to tell you, there's plenty to bitch about.
Dude, Pete's on me in Chicago on Saturday, man. Come on out now, all right?
You got it.
Jim Litke joining us here from Chicago in the Windy City. They call it the Second City. I spent the decent portion of my formative years at the turn of the century on the north side in Northbrook, Illinois, on Techney Road. So I'll be talking about that all week. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour right here in Baltimore. We're going to be at Coco's this Wednesday with our mayor, Brandon Scott. Also going to be joined by Corey McRae, as well as some cop and friends, and my friend Mike Resigliano. We are going to be in Harford County on Black Friday at Conrad's Crabs, having the Maryland Crab Cake Tour stop. And then we're going to be at Pappas up in Cockeysville on December 3rd. My 30th anniversary is December 3rd. 13th, we're beginning the celebration on December the 9th at the Beaumont in Catonsville as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Let yourself play. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. Our Wise Conversations, also check out. My wife made a delicious beef stew with some Wise ingredients over the weekend in the crock pot. My cat wanted a Merlot to go with it. It was so delicious. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, staying warm and getting ready for football in Chicago. We are BaltimorePositive.com.